Hello, America, and welcome to a holiday week of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where this week we're going to pick four or five of my favorite podcasts of the year, guests that we had whose statements and interviews are timeless, that are relevant, and that I think made a lot of news in the course of 2020. So first up today is Amanda Milius. She is the producer of the great new documentary, The Plot to Get the President, based on Lee Smith's book. The Plot to Get the President is one of the most watched documentaries, mini-docs of 2020, and it lays out in great detail a lot of the things that I worked on and Devin Nunez worked on, Jim Jordan, Ron Johnson, Chuck Grassley, Lee Smith, all the great reporters. It's an important show, an important segment, and I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back next Monday with regular live podcasts, but until then, enjoy this favorite of mine with Amanda Milius, the producer of The Plot to Get the President. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as I promised, a very special guest, the producer of the brand new movie, The Plot Against the President, Amanda Milius, joins us. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, congratulations. Your movie is all over the place. I go down the street and people say, did you see that movie you were in? And I said, yes, I did. That's so awesome.
That's good.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being a part of it. I think we held you hostage for several hours, and it's a good thing we did.
I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Because your interview was so important. I think I told you when I ran into you that when we were trying to edit it down from 4.5 hours to 90 minutes, frequently we were like, well, we've got to fit this really complex topic into 2 seconds. And it was like, go to Solomon's Bin. Let's see if he talks about it.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you did a marvelous job, and there were so many great voices in the movie, and you took something so complicated and you made it really simple. You tied it all together. It's a real masterpiece of film and storytelling, and of, I think, public service too. Now, I want to introduce you to our audience because you come from a little bit of Hollywood royalty. you did some public service yourself at the State Department and elsewhere, and now you got this great movie. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to grow up with your dad, John, one of the greatest screenwriters in Hollywood history.
Well, it was unique. My dad is John Milius. He wrote and directed a lot of very popular movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He wrote Apocalypse Now. He directed and wrote Red Dawn, which is becoming sort of the movie. It's got a real nostalgic moment right now.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. People are having a Red Dawn moment.
Absolutely.
which is great. It's one of my favorites. And Conan the Barbarian and Wyndon the Lion and a lot of
What great.
Great things that people on our side really like. I noticed in LA and Hollywood, you know, you'd get way fewer people kind of, you know, they knew who he was at my film school and stuff, obviously, and like, you know, in the industry, but you didn't get people coming up to you saying, "Oh my God, your dad made my favorite movie." That only started happening when I moved to DC.
No kidding.
Yeah, because he, I guess, you know, when I met Newt Gingrich, actually, he was like, "I love Wyndon the Lion. I've memorized it. It's my favorite thing." So I got him a signed script of that for Uncle Newt there.
How cool
but
is that?
yeah, it's very cool because I mean, obviously, my dad respects these guys so much, and he's really he's you know he's very right wing, and that was very weird in Hollywood. People didn't there was definitely a tension between his politics and Hollywood, but it wasn't like it is now. If it was like it is now, he never would have had a job at all, or he would have kept
Wow.
his politics to himself,
Isn't
which
that
I just don't
amazing to
see.
think? All these great movies that
Yeah.
wouldn't have been made in the cancel culture of 2021. Wow.
Oh,
Crazy.
absolutely. I can't even believe that he kind of made it through as much as he did. I mean, they did pretty much cancel him after Red Dawn because it was his most, I think it was his largest box office movie.
Right?
And yet he didn't really write or I mean he didn't really direct again or have anything of you know, I mean he I think he did Flight of the Intruder
Right.
in the 90s, which is I thought no one saw that movie, but apparently it's really big for the Navy, which is great. So there I've only realized
Wow.
that out here.
How
Everybody
about that?
loves it. Yeah. So that's good.
Niche audiences, important niche audiences. That's important.
That's
Yeah.
a huge audience. Well, that's kind of what I'm
Yeah.
doing, which is just I'm foregoing. I just don't care about the Hollywood audience at all. So I'm just gonna do the DC thing, and you know, make movies here. I don't have any interest in winning over Hollywood because it's just not. I just don't care about them. And he didn't really either, you know. And I think I learned a lot from him in that way, which is just don't care what people think about you, and certainly don't care what they say about you. And that's a pretty good lesson to learn when you're
Sure.
really young, and it allows you to think for yourself and not go along with the people around you. You know, I don't know otherwise. How did I grow up in LA, and I'm, you know, to the right of Attila the Hun. so I think it was a good lesson. And my mom is conservative too. You know, they're both. I think on the board of the NRA, and
Right.
they're my mom was a champion shotgun
So
shooter.
your mom is Celia Kay, the actress, right?
Yeah, she's an
Yeah.
actress, and you know, it was definitely a stranger, more unique upbringing in the middle of liberal Los Angeles. But you know, a lot of the best conservatives come from West Side LA. Like you've got, you know, Steve Bannon spent a long time
That's
there.
right. Yeah.
Andrew Breitbart, literally around the corner from where I grew up.
Yeah.
Stephen Miller, like, I mean, it's all there's actually quite a lot of really hardcore conservatives from LA.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, you don't think of that until you start to do the list. Yeah, and of course there was the group Friends of Abe, right, for a long time. That
Oh yeah. That was a trip. Yeah,
that
Friends of Abe is
yeah. I
I
think
don't know. Yeah.
Andrew was involved, and I actually accidentally outed it in a story I wrote. At that point, it had been sort of a secret, and then I accidentally wrote a story at the Washington Times that mentioned it, and they're like, "Oh my God, you outed us!" And who knew?
That's
It's
so
so
funny.
funny. Yeah, what great memories. So you're going to USC. You're in the famed film school there. You're doing great. You have a little thesis short called Lotus Gun, and then you decide to go work for a certain real estate mogul who's running for president, right?
Yes, and I was touring my thesis film because it had gotten in about 40 different film festivals over the course of
Wow.
a year and a half. Which is kind of what you're supposed to do. That's their traditional route, you know, to beginning a traditional film career. You go to the film school, you make, you know, your thing, and then you tour it around and see who bites. And it actually did really well, weirdly, because it was a very libertarian right-wing theme buried under a couple of concepts that I think people just went along with. It was like a post-apocalyptic lesbian weed western.
Wow.
And so
There's
it
a
was a little
mix.
weird,
Wow.
Yeah, I got a lot of really good reviews from like outlets that probably will not give good reviews to this one. But anyway, so I was touring the movie, and then I had all this time off because I was 3 weeks in town, 3 weeks out. I wasn't doing a consistent thing. So then during my time off, I was obviously really obsessed with what was happening politically. I was supportive of the president from the escalator speech on. I mean, I loved everything he was saying. Immigration was my number one issue. I was 100% there. And so I started volunteering for the campaign in Nevada because it was the closest swing state. So I would drive out and stay in this crappy little motel and like live there for a few weeks at a time and then work at the state office there. And then eventually they hired me and I was just like, I'm just going to do this. And then when we won, I thought that was it. I was like, well, now I'll go back to LA. But some people on the campaign convinced me. They were like, well, you should sign up to work in the administration. And I was like, that's not possible. I've never studied politics formally. Like, I have no, I don't even like the government. I don't think I should work in it, which I think a lot of Republicans say. And then I was told, no, that's exactly the reason why you should join the administration, because we need people that believe in the president and the mission and don't have any connections in DC and don't have any reason to sell out the administration for their own agenda. So I left. I just packed up and moved to DC to an apartment that I'd never seen and just stayed for 3 and a half forever. I never went back.
How about that? That's a transformation. And you worked at the State Department, right?
Yeah, so I got
So
hired at the
what was
State
that like?
Department. I mean, I can't, I well, I wanted it because there was a point when, people were joining the administration. I had somebody say to me, they're like, "Hey, you should come work at NASA because it's really apolitical. Nobody fights. It's just about,
The mission,
space
right?
stuff, and it's really chill. It's a really chill government job." And I was like, "That's not what I want. I don't want to go where it's relaxed." I was like, "I want to go to the heart of like the belly of the beast. Like, there's no point in me joining the administration if I'm not going to go fight for the president's policies in the hardest place that we can be in." So that was State Department.
I
And
love
magically, I got hired. And, I became actually the job that I had made a lot of sense. I was the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Content in Public Affairs,
Sure, right up your
which,
alley.
right, which is like telling the American story, explaining American policies in via content. And I don't really think there is anybody else in the administration who could do that. I don't think there are any other filmmakers in the
Yeah,
administration.
probably not. I can't think of any.
Yeah, so I think I happened to land in the right place. So I was in charge of that sort of department of the creatives in government, if you can imagine, which was pretty cool. So that was good. But then, you spend as a political appointee, you spend half your time fighting out political issues and half your time doing your actual job. I mean, the amount of time you spend fighting the swamp creatures and not just the what you would expect, which would be like the career folks, which most of the time actually weren't, the problematic ones were really problematic, but most of them are not, especially in my department, not really a problem. But the people who joined the administration to subvert it, that's really where the big problems are. The bad politicals are worse than 10 bad careers because they can do so much
Well,
damage.
there's something you don't hear every day. So the Trump administration appoints people that actually is working against it. Is
I
that?
mean, we've seen that all the time. Look
Yeah,
at
we
you've got
have.
the anonymous person, and then you've got, and then for some reason, especially at state, we keep promoting people who outwardly work against the president. I have no idea why some of these people are still even allowed in the building. I mean, you and I certainly know a handful of folks we won't mention, but.
I saw a lot of things where the president would give an order and then someone wouldn't carry it out. And you wonder, well, how can that be? I mean, he's in charge of the government. The Constitution says he's in charge. And then you'd find out that his order, his wish, his instruction wasn't followed out. And I guess this explains it, right? You've got sort of two pots, right? You've got the career people, and then you've got the political people that are not on the same page as the administration. And that makes for a pretty powerful alliance. And I assume when you start to see that at work for a while, right? You're in the State Department, what, 2 or 3 years, I think, if I remember
Yeah,
correctly?
3 years. I
3 years.
mean, and the other The other thing, you know, that you said well in the film, which is another reason why they didn't carry out his orders, is because half of them were convinced he was a Russian asset.
Wow.
And that's the danger in doing this information warfare on the entire population, is that includes government officials, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do on this issue. And, you know, a percentage of the people that you're trying to get, that you need to pull the levers of government and make things work, are sitting there going, oh, well, I saw on CNN tonight that, you know, the president and all his people are compromised Russian assets. So I'm just going to decide, you know, I'll just do what right. I want to do and just carry on the last administration's policies.
Right, right, right.
And so you're fighting this massive uphill battle, and it's impossible. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody the first year I was in state. It was the craziest conversation I've ever had. I was trying, you know, luckily I didn't have, this person didn't have any authority, really, but they were completely convinced that the administration was going to be gone within 6 months. This is the messaging that they were putting out. And if anything, it just made it impossible to govern.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, well, we just have to wait these crazy people out for 6 months and then we can do what we want.
Yeah.
And
it's running the clock.
That's so dangerous. There's nothing more dangerous.
And if you're in government, you're like, you know, you're going to give the credence of, or you're going to accept the FBI's word that, oh, there's something wrong here. That's why we opened up a counterintelligence investigation. It takes three years to find out. You really shouldn't have trusted that investigation. It was a ruse. And it's remarkable.
And that was the point.
Exactly the point.
So it's they've succeeded. I mean, a lot of people are like, okay, thank God they didn't succeed.
But they already
did. And I kind of say, well, they did, because we were in government. And it's actually really amazing that the administration was able to do so many of these, accomplish so many of the things that they did, considering they were fighting with both hands the entire time, either the Russia hoax or the Ukraine hoax or, you know, whatever it was. It just made things so much more difficult.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I assume that that context, seeing that play out, you know, the Politicos against the president because they believe the FBI was probably right about the Russia thing.
They were just out for themselves. I mean, that's the other thing, is if you hire one Bushy, which is what we talk about, they hire themselves. They'll get all their friends in government. To be fair, I'm not talking about not all Bushies, but most Bushies.
Uh-huh.
Are really terrible, and they get in government, and then they hire everybody they ever knew in Washington who've been living here for the last 10 years. And
hence
my
the swamp dynamic.
You know, Rick Grinnell says, what was that?
The swamp dynamic. You bring all your friends
exactly.
in.
Yeah, exactly. And Rick says the best thing, which I think is absolutely true, which is no more people with DC addresses in the government. Like, we absolutely need people from all over the country.
Real people. Real America.
Real people who have real jobs and who know how the economy works.
So
interesting. Yeah, that's what we need.
That's wild. All right, so you get this context, right? You're watching these sort of two layers of government, the anti-Trump political layer and the permanent bureaucracy layer. Does that give you some context to take the leap and say, I'm going to go make a movie called The Plot Against the President, which, of course, is based on Lee Smith's great movie. But how much was the experience on the inside of government influential in your decision to go make a movie like this?
Well, I think it helped in the fact that I knew a lot of the players either directly as actual associates and friends of mine or coworkers, or, you know, one step removed. And so I think I had the trust of a lot of the first person sources that were either featured in Lee's book or were, you know, extended folks that we added in, because they knew that I was coming from. You know, you can't fake that. Like, you can't work in the Trump administration for 3.5 years and not be pretty MAGA. I think for that reason, and then also because I made it pretty clear that I wasn't going to, no matter what, I wasn't going to sell the movie to some giant corporation and let them re-edit it and make everybody look like idiots.
Right.
So being in government, I think, helped kind of understand the way that government works, and also to have been somebody who didn't come from government. So I think I'm good at explaining how it works to people who aren't in DC and in government, because it's a very complicated web. It's a mess. So I think for that reason, I had a good perspective on it. And then it just kind of became, you know, not to sound too dramatic or ridiculous about it, but I think I just realized I had to do it. I don't think there's anybody else that was going to be able to do it because there, again, there's not that many filmmakers in the administration or in on the right. Like a lot of the films that get made on the right, which is, you know, thank God they do. We need more of them. But a lot of it is like an issue focused person who decides they want to, who decides they want to make a movie. Who decide, you know, it's more like, okay, well, I really care about, you know, the Second Amendment. And so I'm, you know, a Second Amendment person. I'm going to make a movie about the Second Amendment instead of coming at it from a film. I'm a filmmaker who happens, you know what I mean? Like I'm a film person.
You're a storyteller.
As opposed to a political person, you know, going into filmmaking, which is, you need both. There's nothing wrong with either. You need both. But I think for that reason, when the opportunity came up, I realized I really had to. Even if I didn't really want to, I mean, you know, I left my nice cushy government job, the first week of Corona or something to try and start my own business and make a movie that was going to make me the target of all of the people that just tried to take down the president. So I was like, this was a little bit of a crazy idea, but, you know, it needed to happen. It worked out. I'm amazed we got it done in time. Frankly,
it was remarkable watching you in action because you were crunching right down to the last minute. But when you when you got this done, how do you boil this down? I mean, one of the things in talking to middle America who have busy days, right? They're worried about their kids and soccer and COVID and school and work and double jobs and paying the bills. How did you boil down and what is the boil down message, the elevator speech of what is the real storyline of the plot against the president?
Well, I would say, I mean, yeah, that's exactly why I made it, because people don't have time to put, you know, a flow chart together on their living room wall, you know, of everything that happens. And I would say it was both an offensive and a defensive maneuver by, you know, the Obama administration, the DNC, the Hillary campaign, and the intelligence agencies and the FBI. I mean, you just list the bad guys list is so long, it's not a good elevator pitch, but by the bad guys, number one, delegitimize an administration and a president that they thought threatened their way of life and their hold on power, and B, to cover up and distract from their crimes. Because actually, I think you say it very well in the movie, which is that it is both a offensive and a defensive maneuver, this right. Russiagate hoax, because it was both an aggressive attack against the Trump administration and the president and himself and his close associates, and also a, you know, flash bomb, look over here, don't get any time to dig into our crimes maneuver, because it really was both.
Right. And we see more of that every day. Right now we know, since the movie was made, that the CIA believed that Hillary Clinton had authorized this dirty trick to vilify Trump and to take attention away from her own liabilities with email and Russia and other things. So that storyline, which is, you know, so poignantly created in your movie, is even more affirmed now by the release of that declassified document recently. So it is Hillary playing defense to protect her own liabilities and then going on offense to destroy the president's opportunity to win the election. When he wins the election, destroy the opportunity to succeed as a president. When you have... your movie is this incredible story that has a million little stories in it. What's the one anecdote that you think most explains the villainous nature of the plot against Trump? How all these forces colluded together to? Is there one anecdote that you learned in the course of this from either Lee's book or from the various witness subjects that just cements it all together for you? Just how villainous this all was.
Well, I'd say there's two. There's the most villainous thing, but also I should mention what I wish we had more time to go into, which is in the movie, which is what you told me about the poll that Hillary had done, that or the DNC had done, that sorted out that Hillary's biggest weakness was Russia and her reset and her corruption related to Russia. And that's why no matter who the Republican candidate was, they were going to pin some kind of Russian thing on them, and that it was pre-cooked even from then. I mean, that was a pretty complicated beginning. And I wish that, you know, again, the 4.5-hour version of the movie is going to be, which we're going to put out in a series of eight little mini series. Has a lot more in those different areas that people can delve into. And that's one of the things that I think is really important. And to give you credit, that's in your book. And I talked about that last night, actually. The most villainous thing, though, I would say, is what they did to General Flynn. The fact that all of these agencies could coordinate together, from Susan Rice helping to unmask the Trump campaign officials and their daily lives that had nothing to do with Russia, all the way to the FBI agents altering the 302s, the way that they did the interview with Michael Flynn, and now the Justice Department, everything that the Justice Department did, and then even down to the judge himself refusing to let the case go. I think it touches almost every area of government, and it's not a microcosm, but it's the individual example of what they're doing to the president and the administration on a whole, which is why we use Flynn, of course, as the through line and kind of the character who goes through this entire process. You know, he's very sympathetic, and I would say that that's the worst thing to me is how what they've done to Michael Flynn.
You think about now that the analysts on the front line were worried that they needed liability insurance because they thought what they were doing would ultimately get them sued. And the lead FBI agent worried he was going to come under investigation because he kept seeing his bosses overrule or not follow the law and continue to pursue Flynn when the law said there's no wrongdoing, leave him alone. It just brings a chill up our spines to think that was inside our government and that was the crushing power of the state carrying that out.
Yeah, I hope they do get sued, and I hope they all lose their houses, and I hope that their families are destroyed, and I hope that they have to rebuild the entire agency and department from scratch. And I think that I don't feel sorry for them at all. If they were having those conversations about having liability insurance and all that, they should have said something and done something, but instead they let the integrity of their beloved institution go down the drain. And I don't mind saying really harsh things like that. You know, some people are like, well, you know, it's just some bad apples. I don't care. One of the things you talked to me about was, you know, your story of those guys that came and talked to you and they said, you know, these tools that the American public has entrusted us with, you know, such as FISA, and tools like that are meant to keep us safe. And they always hide under this, you know, ridiculous pretext of, oh, we're here keeping you safe. We can't tell you what we're doing, but it's in your best interest that we don't give you this information and keep you safe. I don't see how them spying on me in my phone is keeping me safe. And I don't really feel very safe with the FBI being the way that it is. And the same with the intelligence agencies. They don't make me feel safe at all. And I would feel a lot safer if they didn't exist and were rebuilt from scratch.
That's an interesting, you know, there are a lot of people I'm talking to that feel the way. It's hard for me. I grew up in a law enforcement family. So you grew up in Hollywood. I grew up in a...
Well, my brother's a DA, so he's probably...
how about that?
Horrified.
Yeah. You know, I grew up with eight FBI agents sleeping on our couch or DEA agents hanging out the house. And it was sort of, you know, I grew up in this culture of blue. And yet in the course of that, it's become clear that the generation that runs these agencies and have risen to the top are not the same guys that were sleeping on my dad's couch and you know, catching bad guys 20, 25 years ago. Somehow the culture has changed for the worse. And you're on to something that I think there's a watershed moment coming for these agencies about whether they're on the right course or so far off course that they need to be deconstructed and reconstructed. So...
Well, yeah, and I want them to exist because I want them to protect us from terrorists and from all of the threats that we face. But right now, America is the threats are foreign and they're also from them. Because if you're a person who's got a member of the wrong political party and friends with the wrong people and voted for the wrong person, you are just as in danger of having your life destroyed by the intelligence agencies and the FBI as you are by any foreign actor. And so that's the end of the line.
Like an amazing thing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, and you've put it that way as well. I mean, having a false reality created about you, losing your job, losing your ability to do anything, that is destruction. Like what foreign actor is doing that, you know, who's more likely to do that? The activists in the FBI or a foreign actor? I'd say it's pretty equal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Which is really dangerous.
I agree. These are troubling times, and you know, there. It's funny. There are people on all sides of the political spectrum that can see it. They're the longtime libertarians and liberals who have had this concern about the rising growth of power and the possibility that it would be politicized as opposed to used for good things. Then you've got conservatives who long have been pro-law enforcement that watched this plot carry out. And there was a moment in the not-so-distant future where they could theoretically merge and create a cataclysmic change to these institutions. But time and this election will tell us. So as you look out, and we got a few more minutes here, I just want to ask you this question. After all you've done in the movie and the storytelling, all you saw on the inside of government, what do you see is at stake in this election? We're 15, 14 days away from Election Day, 2 weeks from today. What do you see as the ultimate stakes in this 2020 election?
Well, I guess I would say, I mean, to stay in my lane regarding as the person that put the film together, I would say I'm going to try and not think about it in a partisan way, because I think that's where they've been able to pull off a lot of this hoax, is to convince most of the country that if one group believes one thing, your job is to believe the opposite.
Right.
And that's what's made it so hard. So I would say what's at stake is our, as a country, connection to reality. We don't have any news sources. Our institutions are nearly destroyed, and there's going to be a lot of rebuilding that needs to happen. And I don't see that happening unless there's some major, I guess I would say, consequences for what all of these people did in the last 3 years for these various hoaxes and pretend investigations and abuses. So I would say that our entire Republic is really at stake. It sounds annoying, because who doesn't say that every election?
Right.
I mean, every election since I've been alive, it's the most important election. But it really is. It really is. And something has to come from this, or else they're only going to be encouraged. If they don't actually lose all their power, then why would they stop?
Great point.
They could just keep creating hoaxes, and it's practically free for them.
Yeah. Becomes the new reality. I mean, this will become the new way forward. You laid out so articulately all of the wrongdoing in this movie and the misuse of power, the abuse of power.
Well, it's because I had good subjects. Yeah. There's a reason I don't interview myself.
Well, you're a great storyteller. Let me tell you that. When you look at this, the we're now 2 weeks from Election Day. Nothing's going to happen at the Justice Department to any other people other than the one ex-FBI lawyer that got charged with a crime. What is the consequence of going into the 2020 Election Day without having punished the people who carried this out in 2016? How frustrated are you? And what's the long-term consequence that, at least up to this point, a lot of people got away with stuff?
I mean, we're kind of screwed, like, because no matter what happens in the election, like I said, if you don't punish these people, they're just going to keep doing it. And they're going to keep doing it to anybody. I mean, imagine the audacity of this FBI to literally, and the news outlets, after all of this has happened, after everything has been proven untrue about the various hoaxes, to go out there and say that Hunter Biden's laptop is Russian disinfo. It's almost self-parody.
Yeah.
I mean, someone has to have laughed when they put that together, where you're like, did they put the meth pipe in his mouth too? Like, was that a Russian plot? What are you talking about? I mean, I'm going to start using that every time I get in trouble for anything or I do something stupid.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it was Russian disinfo, because apparently that's something you could do. And I mean, I go on the tangent, obviously they haven't been punished, and this is basically, we're going to live in non-reality. That's the outcome, is that we're going to be sitting here, and every single time there's any breaking news about anything, you'll never know if it's real or not, unless you personally know what actually happened. And half the country is always just going to believe the opposite.
Yeah, it's a frightening concept, isn't it? Now, you've got this great movie under your belt. It's getting rave reviews. A lot of people are talking about it. It really has become a very compact storyline to understand this very complex narrative of the plot against the president. What's next for you? How do you top this?
Well, I never thought I was going to make movies again anyway. When I left LA and I moved to do politics, I really didn't expect to do a movie again. I didn't really actually want to initially because it's a lot of work
Right.
and it's really hard. And I thought I would just produce and I wouldn't direct anymore. But we realized I had to. I mean, I had to. There was no other way to do it. This movie had to
Right.
be done. I'm the only person that could have really done it. I just didn't trust anybody else. I mean, right now my little company is actually growing. The company 1AMDC that I created to make this movie, actually, we're getting a lot of interest both on the talent end and on the project. And there's a lot of people that want a capable production company to make things that's got a taste level that I would hope is on par with more of the higher end products that are coming out of Hollywood, but not
Sure.
with the agenda.
No.
So there's a real hunger for that because this entire audience has not been served by Hollywood. So
Great point.
we've got a lot of really good projects coming up that I'm producing, and a lot of talent reaching out to us saying, really, really, really top talent saying,
I want in,
hey,
huh?
like this is what I do. I'm secretly right wing and I can't tell anybody in my industry, but I'd love to come work on this. So we've got a really amazing thing coming together. So I would say there's a lot of interesting projects on the horizon that we're already in production on. So there's going to be a lot more. I think I'm just going to cultivate this little company that I created to do this movie.
How
Apparently, I
cool
thought
is
it'd
that?
be just one thing, but now it's going to be a lot more. So that's
Yeah,
good.
no, it's an amazing opportunity. Is there a Biden story in the future for you?
I think I'm going to take a break for a
Yeah.
minute, but yeah, well, there's going to, I mean, luckily DC is really a constantly churning
Oh, yeah.
source for stories. So
Yeah, there's no doubt.
there's no end
Why
of
so many great
movies coming.
television dramas have been based on DC, right? Where we had the West
Yeah,
Wings and
it's
all that.
just
Yeah, it's.
endless corruption and good guys and bad guys. And actually one thing I can mention is that I'm going to this winter do I think I'm going to co-write a book about Hollywood and China's influence there.
Wow.
So I think that's a really important issue,
It
and I've
sure
seen
is.
it pretty up close. So I think that's got to get dealt with.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tell people how they can see this movie, because the Amazons of the world aren't yet embracing it. Imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be live on Amazon Prime, 5 days ago, and conveniently they have told us something that our distributor says he's never seen before, and he has hundreds of titles on Amazon, which is
Wow.
we're under an extended content review.
Imagine
And I
that.
believe they're also doing that to Dinesh's movie, although I'm not sure, but I think they're so it's anyway. So in the meantime, what I would suggest is follow us on Twitter. Go to our website, which is www.patpmovie.com, which is Plot Against the President movie. And we've got a Watch It Now link, which will always be updated with more platforms. Right now, Vimeo On Demand is the best place to see it.
Great. That's where I watched it.
And
Yeah.
yeah, Vimeo On Demand is great. It looks beautiful. And we also have two streaming platforms linked on our website that are free speech friendly. It'll never be taken down. It's a really great place for political content. And both of those platforms launched with us
Wow.
as their
So,
first
what are those
product.
platforms?
The platforms are mymoviesplus.com and specialproject.io. So those are both also linked there if you want to support a free
Great.
speech friendly platform. And Vimeo On Demand, you can watch it on your TV, you can watch it on your laptop, et cetera, and it's playing in theaters. Actually, if you also click on our website, we're adding five more theaters every week. So if you
Wow.
want it in your town, it's playing, and we're starting with Middle America and then going out as opposed to the other way around. This is the anti-Hollywood movie, so we're starting in South Dakota and going out as opposed to New York and LA and going in. So it's playing in about 8 different cities across America right now, and it grows every day. So check the link and
congratulations.
you can buy tickets. Thank you.
It's a real labor of love you did, and it's an amazing story. It's told so well. It's visually compelling. It's got a great frame for a storyline. You can really understand it. Folks, if you haven't seen it, do it before Election Day. It's worth it. The Plot Against the President by the amazing, the one and only Amanda Milius. Thank you so much, Amanda, for joining us today. Let's have you back on soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, John. This was so fun.
Same here. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special. 4 years for $30 and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, that wraps up my favorite interview with Amanda Milius. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back tomorrow. I think we're going to have, Devin Nunes tomorrow, staying on the theme of Russia. We had several good interviews with him, but this interview I picked out is, I think, the most relevant and most current when it comes to revelations in the Russia case. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back tomorrow with another favorite edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.